This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are, and it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
Hey, welcome to Politics by Faith. Thanks for being here. We did a special just the other day called Coming to America, Then Versus Now. Very interesting. The guests we had on were surprising. Not a single lefty could listen to the guests today and conclude that we're just a bunch of bigots, xenophobic bigots. It's impossible. It was very fascinating. But what is different about America now, or our immigration system now, or the immigrants now, compared to back in the day? Are we really a nation of immigrants? And what does that mean? What do the Democrats mean? Or what do people mean when they say that? What do they really mean? Those are the things we talked about. And then we wrapped up with a biblical perspective on immigration, legal and illegal. And I think it's helpful and I think it's good. Enjoy. Hey, America's the greatest country in the world. Thanks for being here. Our latest special, Coming to America Then and Now. What's the difference between what's happening now versus what happened for the last hundreds of years in this country? Let's start with this question. Are we a nation of immigrants? We're told that all the time. Oh, we're a nation of immigrants. So of course you need to open up the floodgates. We're a nation of immigrants, right? Well, I'm not an immigrant. I was born here. My parents are born here. Their parents are born here. My kids are born here. So we're not immigrants. So there's that. I guess if you go far back enough, everyone had an ancestor who at one point moved from one place to a different place, wherever they are around the world. But you hear this phrase all the time, we're a nation of immigrants. Joe Biden the other day, he upped the ante, he said this.
You use the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakin Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal, it's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country.
They built the country. Illegal immigrants built the country. Because I hear that, I'm like, wow, did Americans ever do anything? First of all, that's not even true, that immigrants built the country. In 1900, that was when we had the highest percentage of foreign-born people in this country. It was 14% of the country. So 1 in 7 people were born in a different country, 1 in 7. 1 in 7 were not responsible for building the country. But we hear this from the left all the time. We hear that if it's not illegal immigrants building the country, it's the slaves who built the country. It's as if people who were born here have never done anything worthwhile. And it's everywhere. Remember, the book Hamilton that got turned into that Broadway play? Here's Barack Obama speaking of Alexander Hamilton.
In the character of Hamilton, a striving immigrant who escaped poverty, made his way to the New World, climbed to the top by sheer force of will and pluck and determination, Lin-Manuel saw something of his own family. And every immigrant family.
So you have a rewriting of history here that Alexander Hamilton was an immigrant, made his way to the New World, and he was born in the Caribbean on a British island and then moved to another British colony just over, like, we'll skip over in America in 1772 before the war. So he went from one British colony to another British colony. I don't know if that really makes him an immigrant, right? But whatever, it fits into this whole narrative that, oh, we're a nation of immigrants. We're built by immigrants. Even our founding fathers were immigrants. When Donald Trump became president, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Department website had their mission statement. And the statement used to say, so this is under Barack Obama, the statement said that this agency secures America's promise as a nation of immigrants by providing blah, 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 blah. Then that's what it used to say, a promise of a nation of immigrants. And then Trump came in and they changed it. They changed the mission statement. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Administration, administers the nation's lawful immigration system, protecting Americans, securing the homeland, honoring our values. Whose values? Our values. So maybe the better question is, are we a nation of immigrants, or are we a nation for immigrants? Every time you hear people on the left talk about, oh, we're a nation of immigrants, what they're really saying is we're a nation for immigrants, or we should be a nation for immigrants, where Donald Trump says we're a nation for Americans. We're not acting like it, but that's what we should. That should be our mission statement. But no, our mission statement today is that we're a nation not only of immigrants, but for immigrants. This goes back to Trump. Remember when all the Haitians were coming in, the Haitian encampment at the border? And he said, why do we need more Haitians? All right, people got real hung up on that. But notice his question wasn't, why do Haitians need America? Well, of course Haitians need America. If you were a Haitian, of course you prefer to be in America than Haiti. But that's not what Trump said. He said, why do we need more Haitians? Because in his mind, it's America first, and this country, this government, our government, is for us, should be, but not to the left. We're a nation not only of immigrants, but for immigrants. So that's an interesting question. Let me give you this story here. There were 1,000 African illegal aliens who went to a New York City Council meeting. Right? This is a perfect example of this. Are you immigrants here for us? Or are you here for you? Okay, you're here for you. Great. You can think that, but are we here for you? Like, do you think we're here to serve you? Is that what you think's happening here? Because really, you should be here to serve us, if anything. But if you want to pretend that you're here for, or if you want to say, know that you're here for you, and okay, I get it. But we're definitely not here for you. That's not the point of this relationship. But they think it is. So there's 1,000 African illegal aliens in a New York City Council meeting complaining. Here.
This is unacceptable. This is shameful time in New York history. This city is not friendly for all people. It is anti-African and xenophobic.
Okay, anti-African and xenophobic. New York City is not friendly to all people. Here are some of these migrants, illegal aliens, complaining about the shelter and the food.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But at the shelter, the food, my kids cannot eat the food at the shelter.
Kasuma edo men sonji no motta parce que tabi kadi horu gongol artay kiki de taba nyamete on ababata mu nyamude.
And on Ramadan time, we couldn't eat because when you come back for on the breaks, the food is no good at all.
Food's no good. You're not doing enough to serve them because we're a nation for immigrants, right? You're not doing enough. The food's no good. Come on now. Back to the garlic lady here.
Like I said, I was emphasis many times that, you know, we are African. We don't speak African. We have different specificity in Africa. I'm from Central Africa. My mom is from East Africa. My mommy speak Aramaic. My dad don't speak Aramaic. He don't even understand it. I do because my mom is Aramaic, so I do. But only in the Congo, you have like more than 500 languages. Swahili is being spoken in Burundi, so I can speak with somebody from Burundi, but I cannot speak Swahili with somebody from Mauritania to teach to those people. That's what we're asking the city, and the city refused to accommodate. And since two.
That's accommodate, she said there. The city refuses to accommodate. Accommodate what? The 500 languages that are spoken in the Congo being spoken here. One person said, we can accommodate all the people tonight who are here from the Congo. There's a 1 a.m. flight from JFK that'll take you to a country that speaks 500 languages. Problem solved. How dare you? How dare you? We're a nation of immigrants. Later in the hearing, that same hearing, they complained that African illegal aliens, they receive free tampons, but they don't use tampons in Africa. So that's offensive for you to impose your ways on them. See, you're not here for the immigrants. So I talked to this city councilwoman on my radio show. Her name is Vicky Palladino. There's 51 city council members in New York. 9 of them are conservative, and she's one of the 9.
I don't want to see anybody mistreated in any sort of way. But I have to ask you, what motivated you to come here thinking the streets are paved with gold? They're not. They're absolutely not, and you're living through that.
The streets are paved with gold. Reminded me of an interview I did 10 years ago with a World War II veteran in San Diego named Bud Fink. Bud is no longer with us, but he's a legend in the Slater family because he told amazing stories that my kids know. And one of them is the streets are paved with gold. His family came from Ukraine. And Bud was a young boy, and he asked his dad why you came to America. And he said, son, the streets are paved with gold. And young Bud laughed and said, you didn't believe that, did you? And his dad grabbed him by the arm and pulled him over to the window and said, look out there. The streets are paved with gold. We have a house. You go to school, your uncle's a roofer, your aunt's a secretary. We have all we need here. The streets in America are paved with gold. And Bud Fink said, and he was absolutely, positively, completely, entirely right. And that's a beautiful story. It's 10 years ago he told me that. I'll never forget it. What's different now? That's what this special is about. I'll tell you, 10 years ago, when he told me that story, I never had to make the point that you had to work still. It wasn't an escalator of gold. It was a street. It was a street that you had to mine your own gold and lay your own pavement. Sure, you can benefit from the gold streets that have been laid before you by other people. We all benefit from that. But to say, well, I'm here, lay it on me. This food? Nah, this food's no good. That's never how it worked. That's never what the immigrant experience was in this country. There was always an assumption that the immigrant was here to make a new life, sure, but to improve the conditions of the country here, not just to sit back and wait to be served. So the big difference, I would argue, and we have two guests here who can look forward to their insight, but the big difference I would argue between then and now with immigration is there was no welfare state then, which required immigrants to other immigrants to help you, or organizations of fellow Italians to help Italian immigrants. But now that doesn't exist, so now they just have to rely on the taxpayer, you, to accommodate. America first, right?
Hey, this is Vivek Ramaswamy. The media has systematically lied to you. The Hunter Biden laptop story, the origin of COVID-19, the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, or how your money's being spent in Ukraine. Enough already with the lies. No more lies, hard truths only. That's what the Truth Podcast is all about. It's not standard conservative talking points. If you want that, go somewhere else. But if you want the hard truth delivered to you in a way that challenges you and will challenge me intellectually, you're not going to find anything like this on the internet. Subscribe to the Truth Podcast today on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, if a case can be made that an immigrant or a group of immigrants can come to America and make America better, then sure, make that case. But no one's even making that case, because it's not America first, it's immigrant first. The system today clearly is not working for, you know, from a sane perspective. If you're a Democrat, it's working just great. If you want to destroy the country, it's working swimmingly. But in a sane perspective, of course, it's not working. So we need to make sense. If we want to make sense of what could be, let's go back and find out what was. What did the immigration system used to look like? What was it like when Italians and the Irish and Germans came to America? What's different now? And can we get back to that? That's what our guests are going to talk about on our special today. I'm grateful you're here. The First TV. Spread the word. This podcast brought to you by Patriot Gold Group. Has from the very beginning. Love the guys at Patriot Gold Group. Listen, I bought gold. I also have gold. It's like a gold credit card, basically. And you can snap off little pieces like a chocolate bar. Snap off like little ounces of gold, or I don't even know how much it is. And that's like if it hits the fan. That's gold for when you need it to barter, to trade for gasoline. So I got some of that too. And it's all because I don't trust this economy right now at all. Our debt's totally out of control. We're spending more than ever. No one even cares in DC anymore. I was talking to a senator today and I was like, does anyone care? He's like, no, like, no one even cares. It's like, oh, great. So it's all gonna crash. I think when Trump wins, I don't know. Who knows, right? But I think the Fed and everyone else is going to crash the economy on purpose just to sabotage Trump because they hate him so much. And they need to say, see? So I have gold and I would encourage you to get some as well. And call Patriot Gold Group. They're the best. Call for a free investor's guide. 1-888-617-6122. 888-617-6122 for that free investor's guide. So you can physically own gold and you like in your house, in your hands. And you can also talk about a no-fee-for-life IRA where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver as well. So give them a call. Find out what that's all about. 888-617-6122. Make sure you tell them you listen to Mike Slater's show and you'll get the best service possible. Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer 7 years in a row. 888-617-6122. PatriotGoldGroup.com. Hey, Slater Crusaders, welcome back to our special, Coming to America, Then and Now. We'll go right to Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. Mr. Arthur, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Mike. Thank you for having me today.
I'm glad you're here. So before we get to what is now and the biggest problems you see, what was? What did immigration used to look like in America? We kicked off the last segment. We hear all the time that We're a nation of immigrants. Is that true?
Well, we are definitely a nation of immigrants. This is a country that has that started without any real immigration laws at all. And in fact, the first Immigration Act, if you want to call it that, was the Alien and Sedition Act, which was passed under the Adams administration. But largely up until the late 19th century, immigrants were allowed to come into the United States and become citizens of the United States through some, you know, rather convoluted processes pretty freely. That all changed in the 1890s. There were some restrictive laws which were race-based. I'm not going to lie to you about that. The Chinese Exclusion Acts were the earliest, you know, true immigration laws as you think about it. And those continued well into the 1940s. We saw a huge increase in immigration in the 1890s, 1910s, up until the First World War. In 1924, Congress decided to crack down on immigration and passed what was called the 1924 Immigration Act, not very original. But that limited the ability of nationals coming from outside the Western Hemisphere to enter, and it set a percentage based upon the percentage that various nationals were in the United States Census in 1890. And that continued more or less unabated until 1965, when there was another Immigration Act. This one opened up immigration. It was part of the Civil Rights Acts of the 1960s. And that's what's really led to this massive surge in immigration that we see today, because it allowed people to petition for their relatives to come to the United States, settle here with green cards, become citizens, and live here. So, you know, we've seen the proportion of people who are foreign born go from about 14.7% in the 1910s, it dipped down to about 5% in the 1960s, and now we're up above 15%. So we actually have a larger proportion of foreign-born folks in the United States right now than we ever have at any point in our history.
Wow, I shared that 14% line in the opening segment, but I didn't even think about what it is today. So it's even higher now than it was then. What was the first year you sort of stated there when a law went into effect? Did you say like 1910 or so? Was that the year you mentioned?
So yeah, in the 1880s, there was a huge concern. There was a nativist movement in California, and there was a concern about Chinese nationals who were coming into California to work, that they were taking jobs away from native Californians, many of whom were immigrants themselves. And so that is when they instituted the Chinese Exclusion Act. But 1924 was really the first time that there was a nationwide crackdown on free immigration to the United States, particularly from Europe. And a lot of that was triggered by events following the First World War, you know, anarchist attacks in the United States and things like that, and concerns about the ability of the United States to assimilate this large number of people that we have. And actually, it did give a pause. It did allow us to assimilate people here in the country. But it's also important to note, Mike, that immigration from the Western Hemisphere at that time was free. There weren't the restrictions we had in Europe and Asia. But, you know, the number of people coming from, you know, Mexico, South America really wasn't that large. That didn't really start until the early 1970s and, you know, well into the 80s. It peaked under Clinton, went down after September 11th, and now we saw a brand new peak that exceeded all previous numbers under the Biden administration coming illegally over the southwest border.
That's really interesting. I wonder, do you have any insight into why? Because it would be easier back in, let's say, 1920 to come from Mexico than it would be to come from Europe, take that long journey on a boat. Why did it take until the 70s to get that peak in Latin America?
Yeah, and, you know, that is actually a very interesting question. A lot of it had to do with the fact that most of northern Mexico really wasn't populated. People lived in Veracruz and Mexico City, of course, and in southern Mexico, but you just really didn't have that many people living along the border. And people who did live along the border would, you know, more or less come and go freely. There wasn't really a lot of restrictions, and so they didn't feel the need to enter illegally. But, you know, beginning in the Eisenhower administration, the INS started to crack down on people coming illegally. But to give you an idea, Mike, the first year for which we actually have Southwest border apprehension numbers was FY 1960 in the Eisenhower administration. And they apprehended just over 22,000 people that entire year. So it really wasn't until, you know, the lure of jobs in the United States, economic downturns in Mexico, really drove people from Mexico to the United States. It's also important to remember that up until about 2007, about 95% of all the people that came illegally to the United States were from Mexico. They were, you know, coming to work, and they were probably going to go back. It was only in 2014 that we saw the number of people coming illegally from Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, surpass the number of people entering the United States illegally from Mexico. And now, as you know, we're seeing people coming from all over the world, Africa, Asia, Europe, coming to that southwest border.
And going back probably is not in their plan.
Yeah.
So what if you were an Irish fella back in 1920, what was it like legally to come here? Or was there any, was there a legal, there wasn't, like, was there even a legal or illegal? Like, how did you get here and what were the rules?
Yeah, after the 1924 Act, you actually had to petition in order to come to the United States. A lot of people do genealogy and they, you know, go back to Ellis Island. And what they find are the documents, those organic documents, are actually ship's manifest. The captain of the ship would give the manifest to the port inspector, and the port inspector would check everybody on the list. But beginning in the 1920s, there was a formal process that you had to go through that involved Washington, D.C., or your local consulate to enable you to come here. And a number of people, you know, still continue to come here. We saw a large wave of Irish and Greek or Italian and Greek immigration in that time. And a lot of people petitioned for the relatives abroad to come here. So immigration never ended, but it definitely was curbed for a number of decades.
What about before that, 1910 or so? You could just come and step off the boat and you're here?
Yeah. In fact, it's curious because in order to come today to work, you have to have an employer who's, you know, going to give you a job. Back then, it was completely the opposite. If you had an employer who was going to give you a job, you would be barred from entering the United States. And in fact, I'm not going to throw my great-grandfather, for whom I'm named, under the bus, but that's exactly how he came here. He had a job in Pennsylvania, and he claimed that he was going to Cleveland, Ohio. He never went to Cleveland, Ohio in his life.
Well, I understand. Why do they have a law that says if you have a job, you can't come here?
Because the concern was, and this was at the beginning of the labor movement, the union movement, they didn't want people coming to take jobs that were available in the United States that could be filled by American workers. And, you know, that brings up another important point. Up until, you know, the late 1990s and well into the 2000s, the labor movement primarily sponsored or promoted immigration enforcement laws. In fact, Cesar Chavez, you know, famously attempted to keep people, illegal aliens from Mexico, from coming into the United States to take farm worker jobs. That really only changed in the last 10 to 15 years, where the labor movement is now calling for a legalization of the people who are here illegally, largely because many of them are union workers. So, you know, immigration makes strange bedfellows just like politics does, and dance partners change all the time.
Talk to me about the immigrant experience itself. So if you're an Irish person coming off the boat in 1910, how is that different than a Venezuelan getting off the airplane at JFK today?
Significantly different. If you were an Irishman coming to the United States and you had family, you generally went to where that family is, which is why we see, you know, huge Irish populations, concentrations in towns like Boston, Savannah, even Baltimore, where, you know, people would go to when they would stay. There was no social, safety net. There was no welfare. If you were an Irishman, generally what you did was you got support from the Catholic Church if you were Catholic, or from the Presbyterian or Church of Ireland if you were one of those faiths, and those people provided for you. But the really interesting thing is it had a huge effect on local politics. So if you were an Irishman coming to the United States, there were Irish politicians who got elected, you know, in many northern cities. And they would, if they could, provide you with a job. That's why, again, there are so many Irish police officers and Irish firefighters, because those were jobs that were political jobs that the local, you know, Irish boss could give to you. And that's how you provided for yourself. If you're a Venezuelan coming to the United States today and you end up in New York City, the Catholic Church, you know, will try to provide for you. But the most of the support that you're going to get is from the city of New York itself, which is why, you know, it's up around $5 billion that they're projecting they're going to pay for the migrants who have come here. So, and New York has taken that upon themselves. But that itself, Mike, creates a magnet. It draws people to the United States. If you're going to pay $7,000 to a smuggler and that's all the money you have, you don't really worry about it. Because you know that once you get to the United States, you're going to get transportation, you're going to get a place to live, you're going to get food, and, you know, you're going to get English language training and put on the path to a job. So, you know, again, we are a humanitarian people. We are a nation of immigrants, and we all have, you know, those rose-colored, you know, misty memories of our past. But, you know, that past was a world in which we didn't have, you know, welfare. Now we do have welfare. And as Milton Friedman said, open immigration and a welfare state are incompatible. And we definitely see the late great economist's wisdom coming to the fore right now.
That's right. I got about 30 seconds for this last question. What do you make of the argument like, oh, you conservatives, you guys are making a big deal about nothing. We've had all these periods in our history that we've been speaking of here that everyone was all worried about, Irish need not apply, et cetera. And it all worked out. And now we have St. Patrick's Day and we like tacos and this is no different than that. And just get over it. What do you say to that?
Well, again, with respect to that, you know, times change, things change. We are in uncharted territories. As I noted at the outset, we now have the largest percentage of foreign-born people in the United States. And it's absolutely crucial if those, you know, if anybody who comes here, that they be able to provide for themselves, which is actually what the legal immigration system does. If you come to the United States, you either have to have a job or a relative who can sponsor you. Right now, we're talking about 5 million people who have entered the United States illegally since Joe Biden took office. We don't have housing for 5 billion people. We don't have the medical system that can provide for it. It's putting a huge strain on the education system. It's best to return to the limits that Congress set, ensure people can care for themselves, and that they can build and contribute to this country so we can continue to be a country of immigrants. But if I may very briefly say, the biggest concern is one that was voiced by Barbara Jordan, former congressman from Houston, big civil rights advocate, back in the 1990s. She said, if we can't control illegal immigration, I fear that Americans will lose faith in legal immigration. And in poll after poll that we see, that's exactly what's happening today.
Oh, very interesting. Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. Andrew, great to talk to you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
More coming up. Coming to America, then versus now. Mike Slater on the First TV. Spread the word. Hey, Slater Crusaders, welcome back to our special Coming to America, Then versus Now. Simon Hankinson is here, senior fellow at the Border Security and Immigration Center at the Heritage Foundation. Simon, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Great to be with you.
I'm grateful you're here. We kicked off the show asking the question, because we hear it all the time, are we a nation of immigrants? What does that mean exactly?
All nations are nations of immigrants. If you go back far enough, you know, 50,000 years ago, when the first Europeans and Chinese and descendants of pretty much everybody who's in North America came out of Africa, you know, it just depends on how far back you go. There are really no indigenous peoples outside probably the Rift Valley in Africa. And the history of the U.S. is almost the most recent, because there was an indigenous population that came maybe, 40,000 years ago, who were still here in 1607 when people arrived from England and when the Spanish arrived a few decades earlier. And ever since then, we've been piling up people from different places, depending on what's going on in the rest of the world and what our laws are like.
What do you make of this argument that, oh, you conservatives, you're making a big deal out of nothing. There's always been immigrants coming into America, the Irish, the Germans, the Italians, the whatever. And it's always been contentious, but it's always worked out in the end. And now we like to eat, we have Irish holidays and German beer, and we love Italian food. And it's going to be the same thing with the Venezuelans. You just got to wait a little while and it'll all be fine. Why is that not true?
Well, I think over time, people assimilate. I know that's become these days almost a toxic thing to say on the left. You know, they prefer the salad bowl, the sort of Balkans where everybody keeps their own culture and their own identity. But if you look back at American history, every group that arrived until fairly recently assimilated within a generation or two, whether you were Italian or Irish or German. After a couple generations, you were just as likely to go to college or become a doctor or politician or start a business as someone who came from, say, English stock or Scottish stock. But what has been true in the past is that every time you have a sort of a football in the python, if you like, a mass immigration bulge, it becomes more difficult to assimilate people. We tend to suffer some economic damage and some societal damage in the years that follow. And if you look at, for example, the period between 1924 and 1965, when immigration was very reduced, that was a time during which we had unbelievable, after the Great Depression and World War II, decades of prosperity. So it seems like there is a number of people that the United States can handle in terms of immigration and assimilate. But if you exceed that and you put too many kids into the schools, too many people into the healthcare system without the money to pay for it, then the consequences outweigh the benefits.
You brought up an interesting visual, the football and the python. I like that. Is the idea of that it's too many people at one time from the same place, whether that's country or region, or is that just too many people in general, it doesn't matter where they're from?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the fact is, when you have, say, 5 million people that have come in illegally or under what I'd call bogus programs under the Biden administration, they're not all going, you know, spread out around the 50 states and within those 50 states to towns and communities. If you have a school, I used to teach school in Florida, and I had one or two kids in every class who were English as a second language or even spoke no English at all. And they would very quickly catch up, and it wasn't a huge burden on the teacher. But if I'd had five kids or half my class were English as a second language speakers, that would just divert so much time that the rest of the kids would suffer. So what's tended to happen in the past few years is that people go where other people like them already live. So they go to New York City, they go to Miami, they go to Los Angeles, they go to Chicago, and so they flood the zone, and it's in those cities where we see the crisis in healthcare, the $4 billion a year that New York is trying to find out of its already deficit budget. And so if the number was spread out, I think it would be much more easy to accommodate. But people go where they want to go.
What's different now in our country than 1910 that makes immigration different now?
Well, the last time we had this number of foreign-born, I think that the highest percentage we've ever had, it's over 15%, was in about 1890. So there was a big surge of immigration towards the end of the 19th century that ended, as I mentioned, in 1924, but probably earlier than that in World War I. So this is the next massive wave that we're experiencing now. It started probably in the 60s and has been ramping up and got super heavy after 2000. So what's changed is that we have a very high percentage of foreign-born. I'm one of them. I was born in England. And I think we're failing to assimilate them in the way that we did in the past because the flow is just so rapid.
I wonder how much of that lack of assimilation is their fault or our fault. I think it's definitely both. But I wonder about the cultures that are coming in. And I don't think there's enough conversation about culture. Have you thought about this? Have you studied this? Like maybe the culture of someone coming from Ireland to America is easier to assimilate than if you're coming from Guatemala or the Congo, as a clip we played in earlier. Is that a factor as well that maybe is different now than in the past?
Well, I guess it in the beginning, the first whatever 100 years until, you know, maybe 1965, the vast majority of people coming in were coming from Western Europe. So they tended to share certain cultural values, let's say Greco-Roman, you know, intellectual roots, if they'd gone to school, and many people really hadn't. They spoke Western European languages. There was a small proportion from Eastern Europe, which grew a lot towards the end of the 19th century. But there were certain commonalities that made it maybe easier for people to assimilate. Since 1965, the bulk of the immigration has been from Latin America, Africa, and Asia, and the cultures are more diverse. So there's more work to be done. But we've seen one of the striking statistics is that out of the top 10 highest earning ethnic groups, I think 7 of them are non-European. So Ghanaians, Nigerians, Ethiopians, for example, earn on average more than the average white American. So there's huge variation. Yes. Among Africans, among Asians, Indians and Pakistanis are extraordinarily successful, Chinese Americans, Japanese Americans, and other cultures from Asia don't do as well in the first or second generation. So it's difficult to generalize, but it's absolutely a fact that some cultures seem to have an easier time fitting in to America's kind of freewheeling capitalist free speech society than others.
Got about 30 seconds. What's one thing you would change with our immigration policy today if you could?
Well, I would restore the rule of law. I mean, the biggest problem is we can't talk about legal immigration, about what's in the national interest, because we are letting everybody in who shows up. It is a farce. I call it the McVisa program. And until we get control of that, we're never going to have an intelligent conversation about what's in America's best interest.
Simon Hankinson, Senior Fellow, Border Security and Immigration Center at the wonderful Heritage Foundation. Simon, great to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Coming up next, talk about the biblical perspective on immigration and legal and illegal immigration. That's next right here on the First TV. Hey, welcome back to our special Immigration Then and Now. Fascinating interviews we just had. I would say the biggest differences between immigration then and now today, or I should say back then, we had a big country that needed to be filled. We had plenty of work to be done. We needed people much more now, much more then, than we did now. Also now we have drugs, we have fentanyl. Fentanyl is the number one killer of 18 to 45 year olds in this country, fentanyl. We have human trafficking like never before. We have terrorists, terrorism threat. We have bad actors coming across our border. That wasn't the case before. The welfare state is the biggest one. The lack of assimilation, I blame us mostly for that. We don't know who we are. So how can we expect people to want to come here, to want to be American, when a lot of Americans don't like America? I think those are the big differences between now and then. And we could fix those things and have a sane immigration system, which I think most people want, and that's good. Let's wrap up the special here talking about the Christian view or a biblical view of immigration. On the legal side, I see, and please help me out if you see anything different, I see no biblical reason to be against legal immigration. You could be against it for political reasons or work reasons or economic reasons or whatever. You can, but I don't see a biblical reason why you could be against immigration, the movement of peoples from one place to another legally, or movement of a person. You know, Moses killed an Egyptian, then he fled to a foreign land, and that's where he met his wife. So people have traveled, right? There's lots of movement of people in the Bible. I don't see any problem with that. The question is always illegal immigration. So I want to put a couple scriptures here together that I think can give us a pretty full picture. So the Bible is very clear in Romans 13, 1. Everyone must submit to governing authorities. All authority comes from God, and those in positions of authority have been placed there by God. So anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and they will be punished. So the government has a clear biblical mandate to preserve order, protect citizens, punish wrongdoers. That's 1 Peter 2:14 says, kings and governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. That's 1 Peter 2:14. So immigration laws fall within a normal obligation of a nation to protect its people from outside threats, to know who's coming in, to protect against communicable diseases, to protect against enemies, right? These are all within the realms of a sovereign nation. So therefore, everyone is biblically called to respect the laws of that nation, the one we live in, or the one if someone's coming into a nation, or if you went to a different nation, you would have to respect the laws of France or wherever you're going. And you think, okay, well, hold on one second. What about Christians who break the laws of a nation when they smuggle Bibles into China? All right, China says you can't bring Bibles in, but Christians break that law all the time. Don't they have to respect the law? I would say that's a divine law. Divine law is above man's law. Mark 16, 15 says, and he said to them, Jesus, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. So that's a mandate from God, from Jesus himself. I don't care what President Xi says about that issue. I'm following God's law and his mandate. Okay, well, Slater, fine. What about the Bible and all the things it says about sojourners, travelers? Leviticus 19:33, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall do him no wrong. You shall treat him as a native among you. Similar in Exodus 22, you shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you are sojourners in the land of Egypt. Uh-oh, what are we to do? Bring in all the Guatemalans. Well, I kind of gave it away a second ago with the word traveler. The word sojourner in the Hebrew refers to a temporary traveler, a temporary inhabitant. Kind of a good way to highlight this is it's the same Hebrew word in Chronicles 29:15, for we are strangers before you and sojourners as all our fathers were. Our days on the earth are like a shadow and there is no abiding. The idea here is that life is short, life itself is short, and so is our time here. Our time is short as well. We're just sojourners, we're just passing through. The Hebrew word is gar, G-A-R. So there's no biblical justification for 10 million illegal aliens to live permanently in a foreign land, and for the foreign land to have to take it. Like, you must take it in, because it says here in Leviticus that you have to take the sojourner. Like, that's, these are not sojourners. If anything, if there's any biblical insight into this, it's that the foreigner must obey the laws of the nation that they're traveling through. And they're not the second they step foot in it illegally. I want to end with this scripture here, because this speaks to people's compassion. And I'm glad you have it. I'm glad people have it. I'm glad Americans have that compassion. It's a good instinct to have. I don't want to numb that out. Proverbs 6:30 says, "People do not despise a thief. Do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he's hungry." Okay? So you see someone who's starving, they steal food to eat. You're not going to despise that person. You get it. You understand. But if he's caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. So the principle here is you can feel pity for the starving person, the desperate person that's breaking a law so they can eat. You don't have to despise him. And I think we hear a lot of people today say, you know, we don't blame the illegal alien. I don't blame. Like, for if I was in Guatemala, I'd want to be here too. But if you're caught, if you're doing it illegally, you have to pay the price. You still have to face the consequences, no matter how desperate you are when you stole. Listen, we can do this in a humane way. We're the greatest country in the world. Of course, people want to come here. But we need to think about this in a way that's, because it's okay to consider what's best for our own country, what's best for our own citizens, and figure it out from that perspective. And maybe a certain amount of immigrants from certain places is best for America. And I love that conversation. I love that conversation about culture and what cultures best assimilate to ours and doing that. I think that's great. But let's all agree that brazen lawlessness and disorder at our border is not good for anyone. And there's certainly no biblical justification for it. So my point is, don't feel bad if you're a Christian and you want border laws. There are also ways to help our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ all around the world. And I think one thing we as Christians should do is be focusing on people's eternal salvation anyway. That's the most important thing, is someone's eternal salvation. And you can do that anywhere. Right? The Christian doesn't have to say, everyone move here, in order for that mandate to be fulfilled. Mike Slater, The First TV. Spread the word.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.